Hello, everyone. Once again, I'm Sylvain Chamberlain, Reverend Sylvain Chamberlain of the Threefold Lotus Kwun. Let's do Sancho Daimoku. Nam Myo Ho Renge Kyo Nam Myo Ho Renge Kyo Nam. Thank you very much. Ah, itchy nose. So, oh, I'm so excited about the next couple of videos because all the stuff that I've been sharing with you and that you're learning is going to come to a point where I'm going to then expose you to the ultimate teachings of Buddha, and it's going to blow your mind. But anyway, today we were going to talk about the Noble Eightfold Path, right? So at this point, we should have a pretty good understanding of the three marks of existence, which, without going into long definitions, the mark or the, what's the other word I like to use? I don't like the word mark. The three imperatives. I prefer that word. Anyway, in order for the life process to work as it does, it's imperative that we all believe, we all understand, this is about understanding, the reality of impermanence. I think the last four or five videos, you should know that by now. You should just understand deeply that nothing has a self nature. Everything rises and goes away, right? Because of impermanence, we also know for an indelible fact that there is no such thing as a self. That the self is a constructed thing in our human mind consciousness that is a result of clinging and craving to all of these causal chains that allow us to experience the other consciousness, vision consciousness, hearing consciousness, smelling consciousness, tasting consciousness, and so on. And because we crave those consciousnesses, we have an umbrella consciousness of the human mind, and all of the karma that sets it up, and we're in constant state of want, and we fool ourselves into thinking that that's me, that's a self, that's an identity. We identify with it and we crave keeping it, but it's nonsense, because everything, absolutely everything, is impermanent. Rises, arises, falls away. And the third indelible truth or indelible feature of the process of life is that if everything is impermanent and you have a not self, but you have to remind yourself you have a not self because you have the monkey mind is just wanting to prove to you endlessly, yes, yes, there is a self, you are you, you're so wonderful, you're so, you need to be here. The third indelible reality is suffering. Okay? Now, if you understand those three, which since the beginning of Buddha's teachings was an essential component of understanding the process of life and everything, then you understand that the Four Noble Truths are really just an alliteration of that very thing. Right? The Four Noble Truths, all life is suffering. All suffering is the result of craving, desire to be, to, and then an attachment to it or an aversion to it. When we have aversions to things, we're pushed them away so hard, we're constantly trying to figure them out, how to subvert them, how to get under them, around them, over them. But while we're doing is reinforcing them. We're getting our attachment deeper and our craving deeper. See, what we need to learn how to do is when suffering arises, whatever it is, whether it be emotional pain, physical pain, whatever it is that causes us suffering, we need to embrace it. Because when it arises, it is real, it is there. But we need to embrace it, not to become buddies with it, but to embrace it in the sense that acknowledge it. Just acknowledge it. Oh, you're there. Oh, I feel really bad right now. Or I feel really angry right now. Okay, I'm angry. But I don't have to express it. I don't have to fight it. I don't have to go along with it. What I need to do is go, wow, there's that anger. Now, if I can objectify it that way, then I'm freer to look at where is it coming from? What is it? What is it, what part of my body is it circling around it? What's on fire in me right now? Where do I hurt? Where's the expectation? What is it in my wonderful, beautiful life that is being confronted or not met? What expectation is being, what little monkey is being offended by this? With this anger, what's happening here? Forget what somebody said, because nobody can make you angry. It's a construction of your own. We say this all the time. You make me so angry. Well, no, you don't. My expectations aren't being met, and some part of me deeply desires something that when I hear that or see that or experience that, my response, because it attacks that part of me that's very sensitive, is to get angry. They're separate things, but they're motivated. So you need to figure out what's motivating that. This is how you meditate properly, by the way. Anyway, so now that all of this, we've talked about it ad nauseum. I'm just kind of refreshing a little bit. Now, the Eightfold Path is interesting. For hundreds, thousands of years, really, whether you're talking about Vipassana, Theravada, Tripitaka, all the Hinayana, and even some of the early Mahayana practices, although strictly not, just Hinayana practices, the Noble Eightfold Path was it. If you could realize in your life the Eightfold Path, you could attain. I'm going to say enlightenment, but I want to correct that just as soon as I say it. Because believe it or not, and you may be a Buddhist of another sect, and you may have learned in that sect, like for instance, Theravada Buddhism, that the highest life state you can reach is Arhat. Arhat is a voice hearer, a learner, it's the eighth world of the 10 worlds. And that's pretty much all Theravada believes a human being can reach. When it comes to Bodhisattva and Buddhahood, those two life conditions just aren't accessible to human beings. And that was Buddhism for many, many hundreds of years. Until the late teachings of the last 8 years of Buddha started to get spread more worldwide, and came to its nexus with Tendai in the 6th century in China, who organized all of the Buddhist texts that were all over the place. In so doing, he identified texts that couldn't have been part of the Buddhist canon. They just got shoved in there by temples or priests or sovereigns rulers of kingdoms who said, "No, Buddhism's fine, but as well, put this in there too." You know, that happens with everything, right? He cleaned it all up. He showed that there were five stages of Buddhist teachings throughout his 60-year teaching life, 50-some year teaching life. And in organizing all of the sutras, everything he'd read, Tendai, an amazing scholar, discovered that the teaching that Buddha taught for the last 8 years of his life was the preeminent, the ultimate, the teaching he'd been trying to get to all along. Unfortunately, the people of his time, they were illiterate, they couldn't read or write, and the world at that time was very ignorant about them. We take things for granted today. We take things for granted that we understand the Big Bang and the quiescent energy, and that we understand E equals MC squared and matter coming from energy back and forth. They had no concept of this in Buddha's day. So when he started talking about the life process and how we come from this quiescent energy, this amala consciousness, he just got people going, either you're a kook or I can't follow your teaching. I have no practical use for this lofty kind of talk. Which brings me to a point. We're talking about some very difficult concepts so far in this series. But rest assured, in the next video, I'm going to start nailing this down so you can see how simple Buddha really made this for us. Buddha's teachings are not ethereal, believe in what happened before you lived and believe this after you live. He's really focused on how to live a wonderful, joy-filled life of no extremes. His whole purpose in enlightenment and teaching was to get rid of human suffering, period. Well, that teaching then takes place only in our lifetime. So it's a very pragmatic, very earthy teaching. It's about how to live your life well. And it's often called the middle path when you get to the latter teachings, because great joys are wonderful. You know, you get a gift, you fall in love, you know, all these things that just make you ecstatic and crazy. But when you're in that state, you're really not terribly conscious of the life state that you have. You're jingling and jangling, but it's going to come crashing. There's going to be a down. And the opposite is true. You know, you get really depressed or angry or whatever. You can't stay there. You have to come back up. So everything in the Buddhist teachings is about the middle way. Stability. From that middle way comes, what's the word I'm looking for? Security. Security in mind, body, existence. There's joy. There's wonderful joy. But it's the kind of joy that stays with you, that comes from joy itself. So it's the middle way. All right? I bring this up because the Noble Eightfold Path, and you can study it, there's a lot on the internet about it. I just want to talk about it a little bit. Everything we've talked about so far in this series, the 3,000 realms, and then the Four Noble Truths, are in order to get the mind to a place where we can start to implement this knowledge in our daily lives. And that is the Eightfold Noble Path. The first two of the eight our right views and right intention. Well, without everything I've talked to you about in the last few videos, you could meander a lot of different ways as to what right views and right intentions are. What is that? The right rules? How to behave the right way? How do I behave the right way? Well, those first two would be one of three divisions. It's a lot of threes and fives and sevens. Those first two would be considered the wisdom portion of the Eightfold Path. And what views and intentions is about is the depth of understanding that you gain from fully understanding the Four Noble Truths. And you understood the Four Noble Truths by a critical, deep analysis of causal chains, the Nidana, impermanence, not self, and suffering. Everything we've talked about, from quiescent energy all the way to manifestation of a sentient being and living as a sentient being, that process, think of it as that process. How does that work? When the Buddha starts thinking after this point, when he starts saying in meditation instruction to calm the formation of the body, he's not talking about my body. He's not saying calm this down. See, that's the problem with most millions of people who meditate do it wrong, because they think what they're supposed to do is relax their body. Yes, fine, relax your body, but that's going to be a symptom or an effect of what you really should be mentally focused on isn't so much relaxing the body. Go ahead and breathe and relax the body, but take that relaxation and then search around your brain, inside your skull, for tension. Look for it. Try to find it. And use the thought that I'm not this body. I am a collection of causal chains. I am a collection of causal chains that have come together and aggregated and amalgamed a bunch of separate consciousnesses that crave existence, and that craving creates a body, not this one. Look at the process, not what you're identifying yourself with. See, you got to stop doing that. You need to look at the process. Then your body becomes like a permeable cloud. It's like a real, not real thing at the same time, because instead of looking at these fingers in my hand, I'm looking in my mind at causal chains and reactions and cravings that result in something that I feel at the end of my arm. But it's the manifestation, the process of that manifestation, that we need to calm. Because what we're really after, the trick is, what we're really after is cessation of the cravings. We need to stop craving. And that craving, we can feel it physically as a type of tightness. But don't get fooled by that tightness, because that's your physical body. Just look for it mentally and calm the craving that results in a body. Does that make sense? Now, this is what right views and right intention means. It's in the mind of wisdom. Follow? With that mind of wisdom, you can then work on right speech, right actions, and right livelihood. Those are a morality, but they're not separate. Those first two items of views and intentions absolutely travel throughout the remaining, or the rest of the Eight Noble Path. The final three, effort, mindfulness, and concentration, are about meditation. or samadhi. Excuse me one moment.